Hello and welcome to another instalment of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are ever proud to be brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, the international break is now behind us, and we can look forward to getting back to league action for the first time in 3 weeks. Seems like forever. Today, we face a Leicester side who also went out of the FA Cup before the break and don't really have anything left to play with, having hit the magical 40-point mark. We, on the other hand, are still very much nervously looking over our shoulders. Joining me today as we have a look at the run-in is, of course, Alan Wares. And in the blue corner is Andy Bass. And we are delighted to welcome back our esteemed sponsor, Mr. Phil Shelley from oldfootballshirts.com. And Lou's over there as well. Hi, Lou.
Hello, Phil. Thanks for coming on, finally.
Oh, you're welcome. Not a problem.
Yes, and thank you for continuously supporting the Albion Roar. I just have to point out here that on Radio Reverb, everyone who does stuff here is doing it free, gratis, for nothing. We all do this on a voluntary basis, but we have bills to pay.
You're not paying me for this?
No, not as such, no.
You're paying you for this.
You're paying yourself, mate. So we need sort of sponsorship in order that we're allowed on air. And Phil is the chap who kindly and very generously pays our bills for that. Yeah. So thank you, Phil.
So basically,
and has done for a squillion years.
Basically what Al's saying is Radio Reverb is pretty much run on fresh air and enthusiasm, which is why we have the Reverb on every year, which you can still donate to.
There's an enormous donate button on the front page of the Radio Reverb website. So please hit it and offload your change.
But speaking of other things that you can donate to, this week we had the Rent quiz up at the Amex, which Al brilliantly hosted as ever. How'd it go, Al?
Great.
It was a very, very good evening, I have to say, and I think Alan deserves quite a lot of credit. He's had quite a lot of credit, so let's not give him any more. But if you didn't come to the Rent quiz this year, come next year, because it's a superb evening.
Andy, did you enjoy yourself, mate?
Yeah, great night.
Second.
Because you came second, does that mean I can get my place back now?
Oh, no, don't start this. Not on air. Not you. No.
Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to convene the selection committee.
Yeah.
See if you can get back in the squad.
Improve the bribery level, maybe. Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping it went a bit better than my night, which was basically me trying to resist telling my 6-year-old daughter exactly how someone gets killed during a crucifixion. It's ideal.
What a bedtime
story that is.
It's basically suffocation, and that's how it was. Okay, so last Thursday, we had the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund quiz night, which we've been plugging on here mercilessly for the past few weeks. We had 198 participants, which was brilliant. So really, really good. And we had 39 teams, beating the record of 34 and 174 before that. We raised £1,942 towards the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund. It was a fabulous evening. Thanks to everyone who came along, everyone who participated. Incredibly, Phil never won a raffle prize.
I didn't buy any tickets.
And Kay didn't because she wasn't there. But above and beyond that, it was a fabulous evening.
You mean someone else actually got to win something?
Yes, they did. Well, actually, someone won a signed shirt, put it back in the raffle, and we had a silent auction and raised another couple of hundred quid on the back of that. So, better still.
Blimey.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Well, Phil, we're delighted to have you back in. It's been a while. Now... How's the season gone for you? Has it been a surprise that we are on the cusp of safety, or are we still nervously looking over our shoulders here?
I think I was fairly confident at the beginning of the season that we wouldn't struggle. and I don't think we really have struggled. Yes, we haven't really picked anything up from the teams at the top of the division, apart from Arsenal. I don't think we put together the squad they wanted to put together at the beginning of the season, hence the signings in January. But I think overall I'm relatively pleased. I think... It's been a couple of games where I think we've let ourselves down, although the team has let themselves down in not getting a result. But overall, I mean, come on, it's fantastic. The standard of football is generally pretty good. It is, of course, the best league in the world.
It's the best one we've seen.
It's the best one I've ever seen. And I've been to see a game in the Spanish league. I can categorically guarantee the Premier League is better than the Spanish league.
Now, Andy, Phil there alluded to, shall we say, games that got away. And, I mean, we could have... you look at West Brom at the moment, who rooted to the bottom of the division. Going there and performing so poorly was not great.
No, I think that is the first Albion game in a long while that I've actually just stormed out of the ground seething.
Stormed out.
Yeah, but I didn't leave the ground, but I left my seat with 5 minutes to go because there's no way I could contain my anger how bad we were in that game. It was
worse than Huddersfield.
Yeah, because Huddersfield played really well against us, I thought, and they absolutely dominated us in that game, and they deserved to win it. West Brom was still rubbish,
right?
And we still managed to out-rubbish them. In that game, we were not beaten by a good team.
Well, we were going through at that stage, at that point of the season, where we just could not defend corners for Toffee.
No.
I think there were a number of tactical things that I think we were falling over on. And I think the teams we were playing against, maybe their coaches or whatever, were just outthinking Chris Hughton. Don't get me wrong, I love the man, but I think, you know, Wagner at Huddersfield outthought him for that game, and hence they appeared to play so much better than Brighton. The West Brom game, I mean, I didn't watch it, I wasn't there, I was doing something else, but as Andy has alluded, it was a diabolical game from a Brighton perspective. Maybe the West Brom coach just worked us out for
this
that
is
one.
Alan Pardew, not a chance.
I didn't say Alan Pardew because I don't like saying that word.
Yeah, this is a family show, Al.
I apologise.
I'm sake, not going to tell that story again. But I mean, it's frustrating, but I mean, do you think that Chris has taken the brakes off slightly towards the back end of the season?
Yes. No. No, I do. I think, and the players are actually mentioning this as well, we're actually, I won't say we're free scoring, we're not, but what we're actually doing is creating a lot more chances. There's been games where, you know, we've huffed and puffed to get over the halfway line, the passing's been diabolical, and I'm thinking back to the Huddersfield game, and probably also the Everton game, which is incidentally, it seems ages ago, but the most recent league game.
I think when you think about that and have the brakes been taken off or whatever, I think, you know, we have to also accept that even someone like Chris Hughton can learn and improve and get better.
Yes, absolutely. So it's a learning curve, a little bit of a learning curve, because Chris Hughton wasn't really given the full blown opportunity. In fact, has he actually completed a full Premier League season as a manager?
Not yet, I don't think.
So this would be if his previous form guide is anything to go by, it's about now he'll get the sack, because yeah, he didn't finish it at Newcastle, he didn't finish it at Norwich, and they paid the price for it. But so it's actually a little bit of a learning curve for him, you know, to see a season out in the Premier League.
Well, let's face it, though. I mean, Chris would have had the ultimate goal at this season is safety first. Like,
of course. Well, a lot of them do.
And make sure that we're in this division next year. That would have been his remit at the beginning of the season. So you've got to understand that whole safety first approach towards the beginning of the season.
Well,
but
I think the everybody knows the rewards are apparently just so great. I mean, look, Hughes gone to Southampton. And he's been told £2 million bonus if you keep him up. I mean, crikey, that's a good incentive just to get one more point than you need, isn't it?
Mm. Well, yeah, but absolutely. And it's also indicative of just how potty the Premier League is that you can throw that kind of money around. No, but for a we'd like to think of it a safe and stable club as the Albion, where, you know, continuance is very much a consideration. Even if Hughton was to go, then they've kind of got their little blue book of this is how we're going to do stuff. So the next manager would be someone who has a similar philosophy, that kind of thing. Mm. No, Hughton is, yes, safety first. And sometimes it was a little bit too conservative at the beginning of the season. And you get to realise it's actually probably better to defend a bit about 10 yards further up the pitch, and on the back of that, then the forwards who we've now acquired with some pace, yeah, and a bit of guile are actually we're not blazing the goals in, but let's face it, we scored 3 against West Ham, 4 against Swansea, we beat Arsenal when it could have been more, and I think that just the whole more of an attacking philosophy, I mean, it's not gung-ho, but more of an attacking philosophy is actually getting its benefits.
Andy, is it a coincidence, though, that our upturn in form and performance levels and creation of more chances has coincided with the acclimatisation of José Izquierdo?
That's one of the factors. And now he's given us a much more dynamic look on when we are going forward. I don't think it's so much a case of the brakes coming off. I think it's A, that the players themselves have just got better as the season's gone on. They've got more used to it.
They've got more confidence.
But you have to remember, like the first half of the season, we basically had like one and a half forwards.
Yeah.
You had Murray or Hemed, Bulldog's been out. injured the whole time. And then, you know, we've had suspensions and injuries to Murray and Hemed as well. We haven't had anything. The margin for error up front for us has been like zero.
Yes.
But now, Lacadia, Ujera have come in. Now, our boots are full, and you know we're leaving forwards off the bench now because there's not enough room for them.
Is this a forward line within the squad, Andy? Is this a forward line you're happy with?
Yeah, at the moment, and I think having a look at Lacadia for a full 90 against Manchester United the other week, okay, not all the way there yet, but you can see that guy's a player, and he looks like once he's integrated into the team, we work out how we're going to do that and how he gets used to English football, but he looks like he's going to be a good player. So yeah, the personnel's improved. Yeah. There's just the match practice against a higher level of opposition has improved us as well.
Yeah, but you mentioned Lacadia there, and you've got to look at our recruitment department on this as well, because there was question marks about the fact we didn't bring in this striker in the summer window, but. Tony's very shrewd. He's not just going to go throw money at just anyone because we haven't got a player. We had to wait for the right player to come available.
Interesting to know if Lacadia was available in August. I mean, other than just, I wonder.
Well, there would have been other targets at that time anyway. It's the fact that Lacadia had a decent first
half. Also, he was injured.
At the time, was he?
Yeah, he's been injured for like 6 months.
But I mean, you look at other clubs in this division historically, and the fact and some of the players that they've signed. £15 million is a lot of money for us. Let's face it.
But it is for us, yes.
But you look at some of the players that some of these other clubs are playing, and you just don't think they've done their due diligence on it.
Well, I think like £15 million in the Premiership is like a £2 million signing in the Championship now, in terms of the inflation.
But even Championship sides are playing that sort of money now.
Didn't Hemed say that he was Reading offered $9 million for him in the summer?
Yeah,
did he say that?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, you're alluding to Tony Hemed's interview with the Jewish Chronicle this week, where he's regretted not leaving the club in January, which is.
I hope he's been misquoted, but for regret, I mean, it's surely he's not. Has he been put that far down the pecking order that he's not going to get another game this season?
I think you're reading too much into that statement now. Basically, what he's saying is that he had the opportunities to go, not just to Reading. I mean, let's face it, who'd want to go there apart from, well, we saw Tommy Elphick's face when he went there. you've got to look at... He knows that he's further down the pecking order. You've got Hemed and... Sorry, you've got Ujoa and Lacadia to come in. So he's now... effectively fourth choice striker, and he's not even getting on the bench. He had opportunities to go to play Levante and various other places in Spain that was mentioned in this article, and he's not getting game time, but he stayed and tried to fight for his place because he thought he was good enough to get it, and he will be on the bench today.
But was it also the case though that that the club weren't going to let him go to the last minute until such time as we actually got our player that we needed?
We couldn't afford to let him go. Otherwise it would have just been Murray left.
That's it.
So he was a victim of circumstance
I'm pleased that he's come out and made a statement like that, because how many players do you see in this division that are just happy to rest on their laurels and collect their money?
Well, hopefully in this club, none.
But he wants to play football. He wants to go. He wants to be the best that he can be. And fair play to him for that.
But Reading, though.
He didn't go there. So.
No, what I mean is for me, it's a little bit of a poverty of ambition to go to Reading when he's actually a Premier League striker who, incidentally, scored in the first game that we scored in the Premier League. So he's clearly not rubbish. And he's the, as was pointed out in the Renf quiz, the leading scorer, international scorer of all time for Albion players. Yes, Andy, you did get that right. Well done. So he's clearly of a quality. We know that he can actually cut it in the Championship, absolutely. And... he's not totally out of his depth in the Premier League.
Well, he was first choice at the beginning of the season.
There was the issue of...
That's spelled O-N-L-Y.
But, he was playing well. He was looking decent. He looked like he'd bulked up. He was looking stronger. He was leading the line very, very well. And it was only that incident against Newcastle, which I'm still convinced we got stitched up with.
Absolutely.
Oh, we totally did.
That pretty much...
You reckon that did for him for the season?
Yeah, because he lost his place and he couldn't get back in.
Well, therein lies the point, is that Murray got in, took his chance. I mean, that is, you know, your classic striker's thing. It's not just taking your chance in the six-yard box. It's actually taking your chance to be the decent player and keep the shirt. Yeah, he got a three-match suspension, in which time Murray then said, right, I'm having this.
That's also another factor in the improvement up front, is that there is, certainly since January, there is now competition. I mean, you know, Murray, not that Murray coasted anyway, but he now knows that there is someone who can take his place, whereas before there wasn't. And, you know, if you've ever seen a more competitive Brighton and Hove Albion player in the modern era, the Murray right now, he's just outstanding. You're going to have to rip that shirt off his back.
Well, here's a quiz question I didn't ask, is who's got the most bookings for us this season? Step forward, Mr. Murray.
Yeah.
You know, which are for violence, let's face it, not for petulance.
They're normally fouls the other way around.
Exactly.
But I mean, you are going, moving back to the Premier League and the way it's shaping up at the moment, it looks like West Brom are pretty much done. Now, West Brom came out in the news this week. I mean, you mentioned the madness of this league earlier there, with Southampton offering Mark Hughes a £2 million bonus if they can stay up. West Brom have got no money. They can't afford to pay wages. They're having to get loans.
What's happening there then?
They sacked their chief executive. I mean, it seems that they're an absolute... historically, they've always been a very well-run club. So I'm not quite sure exactly what's gone wrong there. Because, I mean, they got rid of Pulis. I mean, it's a case of be careful what you wish for, isn't it?
Yeah, Phil, you know how to run a football club. Tell us what's happening there then.
I haven't got a clue what you're talking about.
can I just say that it's not Bonnie Tyler that's actually in the studio with us today. It is Phil Shelley. It's a tricky one. When you see the result of what's happening, as much as there's no money, they can't do anything, they can't, you know, whatever, then it's usually, especially for a club like a Premier League club, and a fairly established one at that, that gets squillions of pounds of money from various sources, and to say that they're actually their pot is dry, there must have been some serious skullduggery. Or,
well, the thing with West Brom is, I think they've had some players in that they've paid a lot of money to. They're not exactly a glamour side, are they? And I think, yeah, if you look at their matches on TV, they're frequently banks and banks of empty seats in the ground. Now, I know football clubs don't earn any real money from attendance figures, but the fact that people aren't watching West Brom means that their own sponsors aren't paying so much for sponsorship. It means that their club shop isn't selling so much merchandise. And at the end of the day, if you get into that freefall, look what happened to teams like Bradford City. And even more teams like Luton and Oxford United, they absolutely tumble down, because whilst it's not all about the bums on seats side of things, is a football club relies on that more than just what the Premier League gives
them
every year.
This is a historical thing. I mean, throughout the annals of history, as soon as the attendances start dropping off, and there's some stuff about Ipswich this week, and Mick McCarthy is leaving Ipswich at the end of the season. They used to average 23,000 people a week at Portman Road, and they're down to, they only had 9,000 the other day.
Really?
So, yeah. So, I mean, it's something that, I mean, historically, that's when the manager gets the boot, because, like... But now, because there's alternative revenues coming in, that's not necessarily always the case.
But it's a vicious circle as well, isn't it? As soon as one thing happens, then if attendances goes down, players don't want to come and play for the team. Alan and I were discussing this last night about how hard it was for Brighton to recruit for this season, because you're trying to get players to come and play for a team that, you know, if you're getting overseas players, hardly any of them will have even heard of Brighton and Hove Albion. Plus, with the new boys in the Premier League, they're not sure how we're going to do, and maybe that offer of going to Southampton or Leicester or somewhere like that is more attractive to them, because there's some stability in the side being a Premier League team. We hopefully have stemmed that flow now, but for someone like West Brom now, they've got even bigger problems if for some miracle they stayed in the Premier League. As Alan pointed out, and we were discussing this yesterday, who on earth is going to want to sign for West Brom? And especially if they've now got financial issues, they can't even they can't even use money to bring someone into the team.
Well, this is it. I mean, assuming that we stay up, we're actually going to probably be quite an attractive proposition. So whoever it is that we need to get in, I'd like to think that the vast majority of the squad that we've got now is going to be retained, but there will have to be some additions. Some people will go. Some are too old, some are just not good enough, but the core of the team will stay there. So there will be some recruitment in the summer, absolutely. but we will be so much more attractive. There'll be teams much more considerate because we're a second year Premier League side.
The exception that proves the rule, though, is how on earth do Burnley survive with half empty grounds in the Premier League?
Yeah, but therein lies the point. It's not the fans that are actually the cash cows anymore.
I don't think Turf Moor's empty. I think it's pretty much full every week, isn't it? I mean, it's not massive. But you look at Bournemouth, though. I mean, they've only got a ground that holds 12,000. But we know that there's issues there.
The reason Burnley and Bournemouth do so well is they're just really well managed.
Mm.
They're really well coached, and their players don't appear to be wasteful dilettantes. They're players that want to get on and work, and that's it. It's really as simple as that, you know.
Okay. Well,
sometimes a little bit of hard work rather than cash gets the job done.
Actually, behaving like professionals in a professional manner, getting the job done.
Which West Brom can never be accused of because they hired that manager.
Yeah.
Can't be accused of being professional.
Yeah, okay. Well, the bottom three currently reads West Brom on the bottom on 20 points, so they're pretty much doomed. Then you've got Stoke and Southampton. If Stoke and Southampton get relegated, Phil, what does that mean for the Premier League next season?
It means there'll be no red and white striped shirts.
That's exactly it. Sorry. For the first time ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's an interesting stat. I'll have to look that one up. Yeah. I'll have to look that one up on the website so I can find out who was
on. I mean, Southampton are currently on 28 points, West Ham on 30, Palace on 30, Huddersfield 31, Swansea 31, Newcastle 32, Brighton 34. So, where do you draw the line on who's going to go the relegation battle is?
At the moment, you can't because it's far too tight and there's still eight games to go. I mean, that's still a quarter of the season. So you can't actually. Yes, we've got this running because we've had this break. It looks like we're going to motor in. I think we've got another international break before the end of the season.
We're
motoring on through.
What's our game in hand? Who's that against?
Man City.
So if we win that one, we'll actually be in the top half.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a massive fixture today, which is West Ham v Southampton, which is now Andy. I mean, West Ham's a poisonous place at the moment, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I don't know why I'm coming to you about this, Andy.
And and apparently Charlie Austin is fit, so you would probably think that Southampton might have the edge in that game.
Well, the thing is, and like you say, it is poisonous. I mean, for all the fact of wherever West Ham are at the moment, because you haven't got everyone facing the same way, you've got issues between the fans and you've got the players actually making comments about the thing and you've got the board themselves are actually looking glum and what have you. It's probably not a nice place to be. That's not to say they're not going to be professional enough to get out of it, but actually that's a place that you look and you think, unless they really, really sort themselves out on the pitch, they're down.
Well, the other thing is, they didn't really need to leave Upton Park, did they?
Well, that's another show entirely.
we haven't got enough time to talk about that.
I mean, the most important thing is the weatherman on BBC South Today yesterday mentioned the Southampton-West Ham game and said, basically, whoever loses is relegated. So if the BBC weatherman on South Today knows it...
Absolutely.
I would say that if Southampton lose today, it really does look grim for them because they've got a tough run in as well, and really, you know, I mean, West Ham couldn't beat an egg at the moment, and
and welcome Millwall into the Premier League.
It's
that'd be right. Have a London game.
Millwall were actually just outside the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
So don't knock that. That is a fascinating game, but what it does show is that. We look at our run in and we say, right, we've got to play basically the top five
and Palace
and like we've got a tough run in, but then you look at all of these other games down the bottom
and they're playing each other.
Everybody's got a hard run in.
Yeah,
and I did one of those like calculator things, and I actually had Watford finishing fourth bottom.
All right.
Watford go to Huddersfield. Watford at Huddersfield when we play Palace. So.
They've got a pretty tough run in as well, and they've got more points than us. And I'm still thinking they could fall in the mix. We're still definitely in the mix, and we need to be vigilant.
Yeah, the thing is that yes, we have a tough run in, as do other teams. Yeah. But the other thing you have to bear in mind is that there'll be teams who are below us, and our saving grace at the moment is not necessarily the distance between the third bottom and us. It's the number of teams that are there, and you can't have a game where teams are playing each other. Like for instance, West Ham, Southampton. Whatever the result is, one team will benefit, the other team will benefit, or the other, or they'll both benefit marginally. But what we won't have is both teams benefiting in as much as they're going to go above us. So all the time you've got, we're worried about us playing the top four or top five or whatever it is, because there's teams below us that are playing each other, then one might skip over us, but it won't be two. At the end of the day, it's down to us. It's within our grasp, within our hands to survive, and if we don't, it's because we simply weren't good enough. The table doesn't lie at the end of the season. We've got Leicester, we've got Huddersfield coming up, we've got Palace. Those are the very three that we should actually get the points from. We're all making out we need 38 points to survive. We might not even need that much, but let's look at 38 for the time being. 40, certainly.
But it makes for great fun, though, because we're looking at every single game now. I mean, it's just like, every Saturday, it's just like another... You're sort of looking everywhere.
You don't want to call
results.
Them cup finals, do you? But
yeah. Well, every game is important, and I'm hoping that we're not going to put our flip-flops on at any point in the season, because going into next season, momentum could be very, very important. We want to finish it as far up the table as well. And
well, yeah, because there's a cash bonus for the further up the table.
There is that as well, but you want momentum, you want to take that into the next season. I mean, there's going to be, obviously, there will be players that are playing today, for argument's sake, that won't be at the club next season. So you've got to keep pushing it on, and you've got to get this momentum, and you need just to keep going, really. But you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Of course, we are very, very proud to be brought to you in association with OldFootballShirts.com, and we have Phil Shelley from OldFootballShirts.com right here in the studio with us today. So Phil, what am I about to do?
You're about to do a live shirt of the week.
I'm going to put that there for a minute, and I'm going to go out the back.
Well, while AD does that, I was looking through the website for a shirt of the week today, and thinking, well, what can I do as it's going to be a live one? And I thought, you know what? I recently picked up an absolutely stunning football shirt, which AD is now modelling. If Alan would like to turn around with the camera,
Matthew,
I'm going to be.
AD is actually wearing a shirt of the Japanese J2 League, V Varan Nagasaki. And I will let AD take over with the words I've written for him.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, let's describe the shirt first of all. I just saw it and thought it was stunning. It is made by Hummel. It has got the most exquisite print of origami birds and so on, shadow patterned into it. It's a player specification shirt, so for AD this is quite a snug fit.
It's a very snug fit.
It would have been loose on me, of course, but what colours would you describe it as, Andy?
Well, blue, green, bit of yellow on the side.
Multi-coloured. I can't talk of the colours because I'm colourblind, but it's got multi-coloured origami birds printed into the fabric.
It is quite the thing.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, this is what Phil said to me. He says, here is your live shirt of the week, chosen simply because it's beautiful. Just look at it. Just look at it.
I am.
This is the 2018 away shirt of Japanese J2 side Vivaran Nagasaki in unimaginably... I can't even do English words today. Unimaginably nicknamed VVN. And they play at the Transcosmos Stadium in Nagasaki. There you go. Yes, in Nagasaki. And the capacity there is 20,246.
Counted them all.
The club was formed by the merger between Ariake FC and Kuninami FC in 2005, and renamed Vivaran Nagasaki. The V is from the Dutch Virede, which means peace, and Varen, which means to sail, after the city's heritage as a port for the Dutch sailors in the 18th century. They entered the Kyushu Soccer League, one of nine regional leagues in the fifth tier of Japanese football. And by 2012 season, they had climbed to the top of the... I normally do this in bigger writing. To the Japanese... you read it, I can't be...
Live radio.
Okay, they entered the Kyushu Soccer League, the regional league, in the fifth tier of Japanese football, and by 2012 they'd climbed to the top of the Japan Football League, which is their tier three, and then got promoted into the National J2 League. And in November last year, for the first time in their history, they got promoted to the J1 League, which is the top flight in Japan. The current first team coach, this is all for AD, is Takayuya Takagagi, a former Japanese international and a very successful domestic striker. Notable players in the current squad, AD, these are for you, include the veteran defender Kensuke Fukudada, who has played his entire career in the J1 League. And then you've got centre forward Shu Hiramatsu, who recently joined from the fabulously named Mito Hollyhock, which is a J2 team.
Mito Hollyhock.
And then you've got Australian midfielder and probably ball tamperer. I'm not accusing him of anything. Ben Halloran, he joined from Bundesliga side Heidenheim in January this year. I tried to find a Brighton connection. I think Rowan Ince was all set to go on loan there, but at the last minute chose Bury instead. Their fans are pretty much of the Japanese style as well. I will post a link to their fans on stage on the Facebook page tomorrow, but they have pretty impressive flag waving, choreography and so on. Much as you expect.
Thank you very much. Well, that is actually a beautiful shirt for a change. And, well, I say for a change, we've had some lovely ones. Now, how many shirts have we got?
I'll get you a howler for next week, though.
Yes, please don't.
Hopefully I won't be sticking a camera up my nose with that one.
By the way, Werner is very impressed with your Dutch.
Oh, thank you, Werner. Nice to see you.
And, I wrote it.
To see you later on. But, Phil, of course, the old football shirts. How many years has that been going now?
Which started in 2006.
So, and just tell me why you started it.
Okay, I've been a bit of a football shirt collector for some years before then, mostly Brighton and Hove Albion shirts, and my brother is a website designer, and he and I were enjoying the sunshine in his, he lives in Cyprus, in his garden, watching the pool go by and drinking far too much wine, and I said, I want a website to put my football shirts on. So we sat there talking about it and drinking about it and drinking some more about it. And then we came up with the idea of actually having a website that not only put my football shirts on, but that other people could put pictures of their football shirts on. So literally at about 1 a.m. under the starry skies of Oroklini in Cyprus, we went online and registered the name oldfootballshirts.com, bought the domain name oldfootballshirts.com, and the following day, whilst I was sunning myself around the pool, my brother set up the very first version of the website.
And it's gone from strength to strength there. Now, bearing in mind you don't actually sell anything, all you do is it's just a visual gallery of football shirts.
Exactly. I mean, to start with, we had, obviously, the Premier League, Championship, Leagues 1 and League 2 on there. And between us, and thank you so much, AD and Andy and Al, for your help in those early days, we had some little business cards printed up. And when we went to away games, we dished them out to the fans of those teams. And with the help of the fledgling social media and stuff, we got the site was getting very, very well recognised. And before we knew it, we had people posting football shirts on there from all over the world. So we were having to add the leagues to it, the different countries. International shirts came along, and in all honesty, it snowballed completely, yeah. Well beyond what
we thought. How many leagues are represented on there now? Because I mean, it's not just at the main leagues either; it goes right down the football pyramid down
What we tend to do is I tend to look at if we take Portugal for example, we've got the Portuguese top flight, but I haven't yet bothered putting in their second or third tier leagues. For the simple reason, there aren't enough teams with shirts added to the site from there. If you take Germany, much like the UK, they have a very, very active lower league system. And they've probably got about 11 leagues on the website now because German fans are avid football shirt collectors, as indeed are British fans. So there's a lot of shirts from lower league, sort of equivalent of Conference or National League or National League South and North, and even sort of down to sort of Bostic League levels in Germany. Other countries that there's not an awful lot of anything below the top flight, places like France, there's not really a lot of interest below League Two over there. Whereas in the UK now, I'm right down to seventh and eighth tier. And it's a bit of a headache at the end of the season swapping all the promotions and relegations around.
Can't Mark sort out an algorithm for that?
We've tried. We actually thought, well, all these websites that you read to look at your scores on and stuff, they all have it. So we looked at licensing it, and it was something like about £11,000 a year to get the licensing for it. So we just do it manually. I'm a lot cheaper than that.
So how many languages is it translated into now?
We've had it translated properly into about eight or nine languages. I mean, people use the Google Auto Translate facility often these days when they're looking at foreign language websites. But when I look at the analytics, we get the bulk of our visitors are reading the British version, the English version of the site. But actually French and Portuguese and Spanish are, well, obviously they're very widely
South America,
spoken languages.
Isn't it?
But we do see a lot of visitors who use the Spanish version.
So apart from the UK visitors, I mean, obviously you can see who's looking at it from around. Who apart from the UK, who is the biggest contributor to?
You'll be surprised to hear it's the United States.
Really?
The United States is provides the second biggest number of traffic to the website. Spain and France and Germany, pretty big. The South American countries, not as much as I thought they would be, but certainly Brazil and Argentina are in the top 10 of countries from where visitors come to our site.
That's really interesting, though, when you say the States, because, I mean, the shirt culture over there is very, very different to what it would be over here, especially with let's take American football, for instance, where it's owned by one franchise, it's one manufacturer, which I think is it Nike at the moment, Andy?
Yeah, Nike are doing that.
So, I mean, you know more about that. Tell us how the American football shirt works.
Well, I mean, just the NFL just own everything. It's run by the league. The league is in charge. The clubs aren't in charge. Maybe there's something that British sporting bodies might want to look at how to run a sport. But like in American professional sports, it's very much it's the league that tells you what to do. You're not telling it what to do.
It's much the same in the MLS, actually. At the moment, you'll find Adidas is the prime supplier of kits to the MLS.
Okay.
It's not so much when you get into the other leagues.
And they split the revenue. So, you know, they split the revenue between all the teams. So.
But does that mean that there's not so many bespoke kits?
Once you're in the MLS, they're all bespoke kits for the teams.
Right.
Unlike here, where it's only really the top teams that get the bespoke kits,
but they
are from several different manufacturers. The MLS, they're all generally bespoke, and obviously Red Bull teams are always bespoke because their shirts always display the Red Bull logo in full. When you get down from those leagues, you get a significant variety of kits, and some of them, I mean, I follow a little team from the USL.
And not Wilmington?
Not Wilmington, no. I've actually sold that shirt as well.
No,
I had Glenn Murray's first ever professional football shirt when he played for Wilmington
Hammerheads.
You
got him to sign it as well, didn't you?
I got him to sign it, and then he left the next day and went somewhere else.
You've told this story before. Can you just tell us what his reaction was when you showed him that shirt?
Well, I won't use the language he used, but he was very, very serious. Where on earth did you get that from? Or words to that effect.
We'll get the golly gist. Gosh.
And golly gosh, that's an odd one. I don't think he'd seen it since he probably took it off.
It
was actually his shirt, his match shirt from when he played. I think it was actually his first professional team was Wilmington Hammerheads.
And
the first word that came into mind was stalker.
Well, we used to sit pretty much close to where his missus and family that used to sit up with Dean. So he was injured towards the end of his time with us. And so he was sat there and I saw him there. And I said, I must bring the shirt to the next game, get him to sign it. And then I was contacted by the equivalent supporter of Wilmington Hammerheads to me. He said, I've got every single shirt of Wilmington Hammerheads, but I haven't got a Glenn Murray one. And he made me a reasonable offer and I sold it to him.
Oh, right.
Because he'd gone left us by then, so didn't quite have the gloss. But,
Well, saved it burning it, didn't it?
Indeed.
But no, I mean, with other clubs, now, who is looking for it this morning, it looks like, unfortunately, that Man United is the most viewed shirt on there.
Generally on the site, we have a little thing on the website, for those of you who haven't looked at it, why not, where we actually display the most viewed teams and the most viewed shirts. Now, that's actually a little bit of cleverness on there that my brother put into it. If you're viewing our website in France, you'll see the most viewed teams of the most viewed shirts of French teams. If you look at it in the UK, it'll be the most viewed shirts of English teams. Without a doubt, Manchester United, Liverpool, Barcelona, Real Madrid generally occupy the top spot most of the time. But then sometimes someone like a newspaper will put someone on their website with a link to it, and all of a sudden someone like Godalming Rovers will become the most viewed team or something. The most viewed shirt almost always anywhere is the red current Arsenal shirt. For some reason, that shirt holds an awful lot of favour across the world for people looking at it. So the single most viewed shirt on our website by a country mile is that shirt. That's 2005-06, wasn't it, when they left Highbury?
Yeah.
But certainly...
The red current one.
That's it, yeah. The dark red one. But as far as the teams that gain the popularity, it is the ones that you would expect it to be.
Okay. Do you know what the least viewed shirt is on there?
Probably the one that Adi's just modelled.
Well, to be fair, my brother's listening to this in Cyprus at the moment. Mark, there's a challenge for you. Can you find out what is the least viewed football shirt on oldfootballshirts.com? And just to put that in context, there are 86,639 shirts on
but
there.
But there's got to be shirts on there, apart from the person who's posted it, no one else has ever looked at.
When I post some of these, when I add some of these to the site, I'm gobsmacked at the randomness of the teams.
Well, you also get things like volleyball and ice hockey shirts, don't you, inadvertently?
Yes, yeah, I have had a few of those over the time, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know what an Icelandic volleyball shirt looks like. It just looks like a football shirt, so I put it on there, and then someone sends me a rude email saying, why have you got that on your website? Okay.
We've got the World Cup coming up, and so obviously there will be a load of new shirts of the various competitors in that particular competition.
Well, they're hardly new, are they?
Well, Iceland for the first time, Panama for the first time.
No, I mean, when I said new,
there's a lot of retro, isn't there?
There's a lot of retro to the look of the shirts this year.
But I quite like that, though. I mean,
I like that. I mean, some of them have been absolutely ludicrous. I mean, you got the grey one, the grey England shirt from 1996, which was indigo. No, it was grey. But what I actually appreciate, not so much about the shirt for England this time round. I mean, I'm a bit meh about that. I like the fact that the shorts are back to dark blue again, which is what they should be. I mean, they had this ridiculous FIFA rule that the countries should, as best they can, be wearing the same colour shirts as shorts. And you think, well, Germany have always worn white shirts, black shorts, France, blue shirts, white shorts, England, and so on and so forth. Keep the tradition. What's wrong with it? I mean, it's either that there's a couple of countries in South America that wear stripes. Are they going to go the Andy-Pandy route that we had? I don't think so. Can you imagine Argentina playing in blue and white striped shorts?
That would be hilarious.
I mean, that would be messy in more ways than one.
Okay, but I mean, looking through the tournament shirts, and there will be, I'm sure on North Stand Chat, there will be a shirt World Cup. as usual.
Well, if there isn't, then you get it fired up.
But I mean, there's some really, really lovely ones there. The Nigeria one springs to mind, which is a great one. But the most popular ones on there seems to be most of them manufactured by Adidas this year, because they're more bespoke than... Well, Nike just really is template, isn't it?
Well, I think there's a certainly amount of that. I mean, the retro thing, it does tend to be mostly sort of delivered by Adidas, the retro look. I mean, there's two schools of thought. So, I mean, for me, I like a little bit of interest in the patterns on the shirts. Teams like the Belgium shirt.
Belgium's lovely.
The German shirt. Which they're very throwback. Even the Spain shirt is a throwback to their sort of late 80s.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But the thing with them is, I just think the imagination's gone a bit. The manufacturers, but then at the end of the day,
they could have appealed to the lowest common denominator, haven't they?
Thank you. But I think doing all the retro stuff on such a level, with so many of the shirts just clearly copying shirts that were deemed good from a previous time, I think it's a little bit tacky. I think there's a reasonable sort of groundswell of opinion that they've been a bit lazy in what they've done. But what else can you do with a Germany shirt? It's white. So copy something that was successful back in the 80s, and all of a sudden they've got an excuse to sell shirts for 50 quid a pop. Oh, in fact, football shirts in Europe in general are considerably more expensive than they are in the UK. So,
and they're really expensive in the UK.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, how much are they here then?
Well, England shirts doing the rounds now at Sports Direct and stuff, I think, for about 52 quid.
Right.
Which is a bit pricey, but if you buy a shirt in Europe, I don't have experience of buying international shirts in Europe. But
about 75 euros.
You'll pay between 75 and 100 euros in a club shop for a shirt of Malaga or Bayern Munich or someone like that.
So talking of international shirts, I mean, bear in mind that you appreciate and know and love the history of them, especially the design and all they sort of mean to a given club or country. Let's go around the room. Do you have a favourite England shirt?
I think you'll find everyone's going to probably say the Kevin Keegan era shirt with the red and blue.
The horizontal, horizontal across the chest. Top.
I actually preferred the one directly before that with the red and blue stripes down the sleeve.
They're both Admiral shirts, weren't they?
Okay, yeah. So which one are you saying then? You're saying the 70s one.
74
the
to 78.
We'll call that the Steve Coppell shirt, shall we?
If you like.
Oh, yeah.
Why
or,
not?
Or Kevin Keegan.
I actually like the sort of the terry cloth shirt that we had like in the early 70s.
What, the plain white one?
Yeah, it was just plain white, but it had...
Oh, the Air Tex. Yeah, the Air Tex, the later one.
It had all the sort of holes in it.
Yeah, well, that was specifically for the Mexico World Cup, wasn't it?
The 86 Lineker shirt was really good.
That seemed to be made of tissue paper, didn't it?
I can give you an interesting stat on shirts. Andy brought up the Air Tex vintage shirt that was done for the Mexico World Cup. In that tournament, in Argentina... No, not that one. When did Maradona do his shenanigans?
86. That was in Mexico as well.
Argentina realised that their shirts were all horrible shiny polyester long before things like Climacool and these cooling systems had come into football shirts, and they knew they weren't going to be able to play, so they actually went out to a local sports shop and bought a set of shirts that were vented so that they could play in that game. And so that shirt is a one-off shirt of Argentina that was never ever.
How do you know this story, Phil? I know you're an expert, Phil, but where did this story come from?
That particular story came from a recent exhibition of football shirts up in Manchester.
I'm impressed.
At the Manchester Museum of Football. There was an exhibition put on by a company called Classic Football Shirts, and they had one of the shirts from that particular game, and explained the situation. So it wasn't even a shirt, because these days, you know, UEFA and FIFA would demand that everything is published months in advance, and you can't do anything out of the ordinary. On that particular one, the Argentina head coach went out to the sports shop himself to find an appropriate shirt for them to wear on that particularly hot day.
So did we get to the bottom of what your favourite England shirt is, AD?
I did, yes. Like I said, the 86 Lineker.
Oh, that was your favourite, was it? Okay.
The V-neck, blue V-neck.
Yeah.
And break it.
Yes, and it was also probably a very thin shirt, again, because they had to play in Mexico. Yeah. Mine, on the other hand, is actually, I'm with Phil on this one, I always actually think of it as the SO one. I don't know why SO, I think they just seemed to do a promotion. It was the red and the white, the red and the blue. But yeah, and then I loved the red away version of that, with the blue and white stripped down the side as well. Yeah.
Okay, and just before we move on, Phil, your favourite non-Albion shirt of all time?
Only 86,000 to choose.
I know what your favourite Albion one is. I'm asking that one.
Is your
My favourite one is actually a Shetland Islands shirt.
Of course it is.
It's actually the Shetland Islands playing the Island Games and in the non-FIFA regulated tournaments from time to time.
Is that the one that Yorkshire playing?
Oh no, not
that
the
was
York,
the shirt of the week a couple of weeks ago.
No, but I do have. It's a very, very plain shirt. I can't even remember who it's manufactured by. It's one of the sort of the lower manufacturers. Shetland Islands international football shirt is probably my favourite non-Brighton shirt.
Sorry, so which is your favourite Brighton shirt?
That'd be the shirt we wore at the Millennium Stadium.
Oh, okay.
With the town crest imprinted on it.
One of the things that really appealed to me, which Alan will appreciate in AD won't, is I really loved the font that the Skint logo was done in. It just worked perfectly.
Sure.
See, I actually hated that font, but there you go. Okay, moving on. Okay, well, today we play Leicester City at the Amex, and we've played them a couple of times before, and there's a couple of games that stand out from history against them. I mean, there was
hang on, Phil's got some breaking news.
I have some breaking news. Then the very first football shirt on our site was actually one of my Bukta shirts.
Right.
This is from my brother, and he said, "The last 7 days, the least viewed shirt that's actually been viewed is a Whitley Bay home shirt, which funnily enough, that is a Bukta blue and white striped shirt. But in the last 7 days of the shirts that have been viewed, that's the least viewed." Thank you, Mark.
Okay, and now it's going to be the most viewed. Now you've done that.
But we were talking, myself and Andy were talking earlier in the week about games against Leicester, and there's a couple that spring to mind. I mean, but the one famous one was with Dean, which I can't remember what year it was now, but it was foggy. It was very foggy, and Leicester won the game 1-0, but the Leicester fans didn't celebrate the goal because they couldn't see it.
I do remember the fogginess. It was ludicrous, and I think there was also, very spookily, I think there seemed to be a kind of this orange glow. It might have been just sort of like the nature of light pollution, because in those days we had the orange lights across West Dean. The whole thing was just this thing out of a Stephen King novel. It was bizarre. And yes, us in the south stand, in you know the open bit, we could see both goals. But you know full well the away fans who were in Worthing,
could not see the railway end goal. And I think a couple of times we did actually just tease them, saying, "Ray!"
Was it the Northampton fans that once sang, "Can you tell us if we score?"
But, I mean, there was one game. I mean, Mickey Adams' Mark II wasn't a very successful time, but there was one particular game during that spell which stands out. Well, there was, obviously, there was the game against Man City in at Wifdean, but there was a game against Leicester, and it spawned a very, very famous thread on North Stand Chat, Andy.
Yeah, it's just absolutely... Whenever I think of playing Leicester, that is the first thought that comes into my head, and then I will go and go back and look on NSC Gold at the... I've just left the Leicester game.
It's a warning sign to all of us about the nature of football.
The first half, Leicester were 2-0 up. And,
cruising, frankly.
And the Albion weren't playing very well.
Matty Fryatt scored in the 35th and the 42nd minute.
Yeah, and that was... And I think that was a difficult period for us, actually. Mm. And then so one enraged supporter stormed out of with Dean.
Straight on
went home, went straight onto North Stand Chat and started a thread about how furious he was.
If I recall correctly,
about the game, and then he came in for a little bit of stick from people saying, "Well, you know, you call yourself a supporter or whatever," and like, you know, the game's not over yet, and then suddenly, like, you know, the goals start to creep in. It's 1-2. Ooh, and not looking so good now. It's 2-2, and I believe the winner came.
It was in the 89th minute own goal.
Yeah.
Oh, was it? I know the other two in that case were scored by Bradley Johnson, wasn't
it? It was. But the team that day, I mean, when you look at the team that's going to be playing at the Amex today, and you look at this team.
Hang on, is this a team of low knees, basically?
It's horrible.
All right, okay. I've never heard an Albion team be called horrible before.
Well,
but
I mean, when you look at it now.
Give it a few hours.
Okay, Kite was in goal.
No.
No?
No.
Henderson, Smith? My favourite Henderson.
No.
Graham Smith.
No.
Florence Chainu.
No.
Alan Blaney.
No.
Robbie Chaban.
Peffett. Well, no, what was his name? Go on.
No. Me. Was it me? Was I in goal?
Get on with it.
John Sullivan.
Oh, crikey, oh. Yeah. Go on.
Fullbacks?
I've got one of his shirts.
Fullbacks. There must have been. Was Vergs? No, this is after Vergs, isn't it? We could be here till 1 o'clock
just,
here.
Just
spit
it
out, mate.
Okay, in goal. Number one, John Sullivan. Number two, Andrew Wing.
Player of the season, if I remember rightly.
The only one that cares.
Adam Virgo was playing.
Oh, okay. All right.
He was playing right back. And centre backs, Tommy Elphick and Colin Hawkins. Midfield.
Now there's a much maligned player. I'm going to stand up just for once in my life. For Colin Hawkins. He was a much maligned player. He came back from injury far quicker than he did. Yes. You talk to any of the players who played alongside him, they said he was a lot better than a lot of people give him credit
but
for.
But he will be remembered for that
own goal. Yeah, I know.
Which I was watching this morning.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so Colin Hawkins and Vergs. Sorry, Vergs was at right back.
You want to have a guess at the midfielders?
No.
Well, Bradley Johnson for one.
Yeah.
Darren Curry?
No.
Keep going.
Gordon.
Robbie Savage.
Oh, God,
Kevin McLeod.
Oh, crikey.
I've got one of his shirts as well.
Bradley Johnson.
Yeah, just said
got
that.
One of his shirts.
Steve Thompson.
Wow.
And we also had...
Yeah, Scottish bloke.
That's him.
Quite good.
Yeah. Matt Richards and Joanne Insel made up the team.
Matt Richards?
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't a forward, was he?
Oh, no.
He was a fullback.
He was playing midfield then.
Did we have any strikers?
Well, Anyansar.
Yeah, that was it.
So must have been very, very close to the Man City game at about around that time. What's the date of the game? Do you know?
It was the 28th of October 2008.
Yeah, so it's actually the same month as the Man City
game.
So
on the bench that day was Adam Elabd, Dean Cox, David Livermore, Kevin Thornton and Tommy Fraser. So, I mean, it's
no
amazing.
Wonder we struggled.
When you look at
who's
that
in the Leicester side then?
David Martin, Jack Hobbs, Tunchev, whoever that is, Chris Powell, Kisnorbo, Max Gradle, Berner, Andy King. He's still there.
Yeah,
actually, he's on loan at Swansea at the moment, isn't he? Matt Fryatt, Steve Howard, Joe Mattock was there.
All right,
one of his shirts as well.
You have to bear
Barry
in mind,
Hales was on the bench.
You have to bear in mind this was a third division game. This is Leicester's one and only season in the third division. They won the division.
But the Leicester team that the other game I've got here was the game when we beat them 3-1 at the Amex, and our team that day was Okay, all right. But if you look at the Leicester team, and this was in Championship, wasn't it?
So it was 2 years before they won the league, wasn't
and
it?
And the Leicester team that day was Schmeichel, Konchesky, Morgan, Mikhail Vasilevsky, Drinkwater, Dean Hammond, Andy King, Dyer, Jamie Vardy, and David Nugent was in, and that's their Championship team.
It's
pretty much
it was backbone of the team not, won the league.
Not a bad team.
A lot of those players will be playing today. To be honest.
Well, yeah.
Our team that day. Do you want to have a guess?
No, keep going.
Brezovan.
Yeah.
Bruno, Greer, Stephen Ward, Matt Upson, Andrew Crofts. David Lopez, Craig Conway.
Yeah,
He scored an absolutely brilliant goal in that game.
Ball from Lopez was just amazing.
Liam Bridcut, Rowan Ince, and number 9, Ashley Barnes, who scored twice.
One player from that game still with us.
Bruno,
yeah.
Oh, actually, Rowan Ince is technically still with us.
Yes, he is.
He's with anyone, is he?
No, he's at Bury, isn't he? Do you remember that from the Rens
on the
quiz?
On the bench, Chris Walton, he's still with us. Elab Calderon, Keith Andrews, Kimi Agustin, Kazenga Luar, and Leroy Leiter.
What I actually prefer from that particular season is that, I mean, we beat them 3-1, and I'd actually completely forgotten parts of the game until you said the great ball to Conway. Yeah, now you remember, yes, it was a superb pass, but it was the game towards the end of the season. And what is it about teams when they win, either get promotion or win the championship early, they hit the beach, don't they?
Yeah.
Because, let's not get rude here, but Leicester were still partying, much the same way we were when we played Norwich. They
and
were still
partying.
Yes.
And Aston Villa.
Yeah. And we turned them over 4-1 at their place. Ajoa scored a couple and then sort of like moved up there. If you can't join them, beat them. So, yeah, we and I think it actually probably did us quite a few favours, because I think we were still staring relegation in the face a bit, weren't we?
And the other thing I meant to mention was another player that played in that game against. We won 3-1 was one Anthony Knockhart, and also on the bench for them was Chris Wood as well.
Yep, okay. Anthony Knockhart set up their goal
right,
and with a nice ball in for
Vardy.
It was Andy King, I think, scored for them.
It was, yeah.
He put the cross in for Andy King to score, and also then set up another very good chance which Brezovan tipped over the bar. Would have made it 2-2.
Oh, okay.
And then Ashley Barnes goes down the other end of the pitch and gets felled by Wes Morgan and tucks away the penalty. Quite interesting this week, as we talk about the old games, because the Albion have put the first season of the Amex DVD up on the website. Mm. And I just forgotten what a great player Ashley Barnes was.
How many really
good goals he scored.
Yeah, he did.
He was absolutely... And he's
still doing it.
Yeah, a much maligned player. Not by people in this room. I think we're all...
We're number 9 Ashley Barnes fans here. Yeah.
Well, but really, what a terrific player. It was really nice seeing him back in the stripes.
And
actually,
I think additionally, what you've also got is Chris Wood is determined to go to as many clubs as possible, just with the determinate view to play against us as often as possible.
Well, he's at Burnley with Ashley Barnes.
Well, he was at Leeds a couple of seasons ago. No, it was last season he was at Leeds, and you know, it was obviously at Leicester then. And right, okay, right, what division are Albion? Right, I'm going to find a team in that division.
He scored twice for Millwall against us as well.
He must be the one player in the past 10 years who's
never signed him.
He didn't want to come, apparently.
Really? It was at West Brom that we got him on loan from, who were established Premier League side. And he's still only 19, so I'm not sure if it was the case that we actually sort of specifically wanted him. But because having said that, don't forget, when at the end of the season that we had him, we offloaded Murray as well.
Well, I think, yes, that was very bizarre. I think if you also look at... Andy was talking about the first season of the Amex. We actually had an awful lot of attacking players on loan. And isn't it bizarre that we were unable to sign them, and the problems we've had subsequently, in you know, the well-known problems we had signing a striker in the summer.
Mm.
Do the Albion not maybe realise that to get a good striker you do have to pay apparently over the odds? I don't know.
I think that is the point. They won't. They'd rather actually keep their house in order rather than pace it. I think that probably, I mean, what would happen last season was were so fed up of missing out via the playoffs, were rubbish at the playoffs, that they'll actually stretch it just enough that they need it. Because we had Murray, Hemed and Baldock, who were both, all three were brilliant last season. They were going to stretch it. I can imagine they were on decent bonuses. Let's get the goals in. Let's really, really go for it. But also we had goals from midfield. I think it wasn't so much for signing the strikers, but having Knockaert in there and attack-minded midfielders like Murphy and what have you, then, you know, everyone played their part.
Okay, and that is, on that note, that is all we've got time for. So thanks very much for listening. Thank you to Alan Ware. Thank you to Andy Bass. Thank you to Phil Shelley for your continued support.
Thanks, mate.
And we're off to watch Leicester, and let's hope that it ends up a little bit like...